Excuse me, speakers, the recording has started.
Very good. Stephanie Perrin for the record. Please don't hesitate. I'll try to keep an eye on the chat, but if you have a question as we go along, it's probably better to raise it if there's something that is not clear. We have a lot of material to cover. I'm going to try to keep my remarks down to 15 minutes or so that we have time for questions and to discuss the issues, but that may not happen. I may go on. I've asked Farzi to keep me honest. So basically, I'm going to go through the basics of the General Data Protection Regulation as it applies to ICANN. I'll give you a brief summary of the WHOIS directory and new registration data services and the issues that ICANN has basically been debating for 20 years. The privacy issues in registrant data collection, use, and disclosure, as we see it in the NCSG and as we have seen it over the years. I'm only going to focus on two real problems in the argument. Those of you who are on the RDS working group will know that we've been fighting about just about everything for the last, year and a half. And I'm going to focus on the purpose of collection and on consent, because these are kind of the panaceas that those who want WHOIS to remain the way it is have brought forward as solutions to data protection regulation. And I'm going to go over the key issues that I flagged and that we put together as a group in the Article 29 letter, which is out for comment. Now, as Farzi said, the ICANN has released its new proposed model on the 28th of February. So we have to do some edits to the Article 29 letter and discuss actually things that are in the model as well. So there will be some quick edits to that today. I hope to get it out later this afternoon. So on to the next slide, the basics of GDPR. What you see there on that slide is a link to the European Commission page on GDPR. You'll note that the law is in many languages, so we have many languages represented on this call. You can probably read it in your own language, but it's a great big long document. There is a summary of it on this page, and you might find that helpful. Basically, the European Union has been working towards harmonized approach to basic human rights and data protection since 1998, well, since 1991, when they tabled the first draft of the previous directive 9546 on data protection. There was a five-year fight over that document. It passed in 1995, as the numbering implies. And quite frankly, there's very little that is different from a data protection perspective as it relates to ICANN between the provisions in the 9546 and the directive and the regulation. The differences are that this is a step forward in enforcement. There has always been the argument that the data protection commissioners in Europe were no better at enforcing data protection than the companies were in the United States without data protection law. This regulation not only harmonizes, because it's a regulation, not a directive, it provides more enforcement powers to the Data Protection Board. And most importantly, and that would be bullet number three, there are potential fines of 4% of the revenues of companies. Now, that has seized the attention of the registrars and registries and of ICANN, because the registrars and registries are bound by contract to do things that their lawyers tell them are not in compliance with data protection law. The mechanisms to comply with data protection law that have arisen over the years don't actually work, and I don't want to go down a big rabbit hole on that subject, but the WHOIS conflicts with law procedure has been up for revision for the past few years. We're having another working group that starts in the fall to come up with a trigger that works.
This is the only procedure that amounts to a data protection policy at ICANN, and it, I would argue, does not work. Now, the Article 29 Working Party of Data Commissioners is a group that was established under the directive, and you have to remember that at the time the directive came out, it was not clear at all that Europe would continue to grow and become centralized in the Union the way it has been. So this was an innovative way of getting the data protection commissioners in each country in Europe to work together on a working party according to the directive and basically harmonize their views, because there was not really a good way for the commission to enforce that harmonization in a directive. It's different in a regulation. And I promised I wouldn't get into the details of drafting, but if anybody's curious, please don't hesitate to contact me. Anyway, this new authority becomes the Data Protection Board on May 25th when the GDPR comes into effect. And it'll be interesting to see how they manage. The principles of GDPR are similar to the 9546, almost identical. Data minimization is a key. You do not collect or process more data than you need for your purpose. Purpose is narrow. It is decided prior to processing, and it is limited to the core activities of the organization. The proportionality principle, which is a basic principle in law, it is not a provision in the directive or the regulation. The proportionality principle governs all details about the processing action. So you may have an authority, for instance, say contract or consent to process data, but then you have to apply the proportionality principle to limit the extent to which you are making use of that authority for processing to actually manage data. And the concept of data controller, co-controller, data processor is fleshed out in the regulation a little more fulsomely than it was under the directive. It is important to note that there is a requirement under the GDPR to figure out how your different entities work together. Now, it's probably worth a minute or two here to go into the concept of a data controller. When I first arrived at ICANN in 2013, I was surprised to find that registrars thought they were data controllers, not processors, and nobody seemed to really accept that ICANN was a data controller. The difference between a controller and a processor is, excuse me, the terms are used in the EU law. The controller is the one who sets the policy, who actually controls how data is collected, used, and disclosed. And I would argue that ICANN does that through its contracts between themselves and the contracted parties, because those provisions are stipulated out. And it is certainly not as if the registrars and the registries have insisted on the extensive data processing that goes on. A data processor, on the other hand, was originally conceived as a company that you hire to do data processing. But in the complex world of data flow that we now inhabit, a data processor can be an entity such as, in the case of ICANN, the escrow provider. That's a classic data processor. They have no real interest in the data themselves. They provide a secure storage service, and ICANN is a party to that contract with them. And the registrars and registries are obliged to use them. Okay, I'll pause for breath here. Anybody, any questions so far? Nope.
I have a question. So the importance of this issue that you raised about the concept of data controller or co-controller is that ICANN under the GDPR is a data controller or a co-controller, right? It does qualify that.
Yes. Now, for instance, a registrar or a reseller that works under the sponsorship of a registrar might have a very intense relationship with an entity. They may arrange for the registration of their domain name, and then they may provide website management services, security services. None of those are within the remit of ICANN. The pieces for ICANN are the requirements that they insist on in the contract with the registrars, and then the actual processing that ICANN has its hands in is limited. They have it in the escrow. They have it in terms of audit, investigation, that kind of thing. But they don't control the data. Now, a registrar, let's pick on McKaylee Nalen, for instance, since he's so visible. Black Knight does all kinds of things. You know, they do web management. That's where the money is. So lots of the registrars actually have quite a bit of data about their customers. They are controllers with respect to their customer data. They are processors with respect to their relationship over the data that is released in the who is. I hope that's clear. And why is it important? Because with 4% fines, you need to apportion liability. There's an important provision under the GDPR that you have to notify of a data breach within 72 hours. It's extremely important that all of these entities that are touching personal data figure out where their liability begins and ends. And companies are usually pretty good about figuring out where their liability begins and ends. So it's an important point. And those of us who are advising companies about how to prepare for GDPR are looking under rocks to find these relationships so that we're sure that everybody is well protected. I hope that's clear. Okay. Whois is a service that provides data on who has registered a domain name, what register they're using, what name servers they're on. ICANN inherited the service when it was established in 1998, and we have to remember that that was the beginning of the commercialization of the Internet. So when Whois was developed back in the 70s, it really pertained to academics and U.S. government entities and a few European entities who were engaged in the building of the Internet. Those details, in order that you could contact them and get the system to work, they were not generally personal data. They were institutional. As soon as you started opening up the domain name system, basically after the coming of the World Wide Web to everybody, that data of someone who registered a domain name became more personal. I'm not going to go over the long struggle of the argument over who is. I just want perhaps the newer members to be aware that the NCUC and its the NCSG way back in 2000 were fighting for data protection over the who is. And having just written a dissertation on this, I can bore you hours, so don't hesitate to contact me if you're curious.
Sorry, Stephanie, I think we have some time to go over if you could mention the importance of some of the groups that you mentioned on this slide and the long struggle, but just, you know, briefly. And the other thing that I wanted to emphasize, Whois service actually contains very sensitive and sometimes personal information, and which has been, and Stephanie is going to mention this, but which has been abused in the past because it is public. And so it contains name and telephone number, physical address of the registrants. And the importance of protecting this data is that it has been used to for abusive purposes, and it's not always about it has not been always used about for law enforcement and legitimate purposes. And a lot of the registrants are even not even informed that their information will be public. And sometimes when we tell the registrants, they are surprised that their information goes up somewhere on the internet that can be accessed by anyone. Thank you, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first committee was formed in 2000. The International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunications is a group of data commissioners from around the world who assembled back in 1983 to coordinate their responses on the impact of technology on data protection. So that group published an opinion on who is back in 2000. There was a concern generally when the internet became more commonly used in government and in institutions that directories were all migrating to the internet. So it attracted their attention as an important directory that was migrating. Well, it was already on the internet, frankly. Then the first task force was assembled in 2001 to 2003, the second in 2003 to 2004. And always privacy was an issue that we could not achieve consensus on. And I will argue that basically that whenever we could not achieve consensus, it was batted down the road. Now, the one thing that we did achieve a supermajority vote on, and most of you who were in Abu Dhabi might recall Milton Mueller raising this. Milton has documented this, by the way, all in his book, Ruling the Root, if you're curious about the early days. In 2006, the GNSO Council voted on a narrow definition of the purpose of who is. Already, the intellectual property folks and the law enforcement folks, the GAC, represented at the GAC, wanted a broader definition of the purpose of the who is. And remember here, we're only talking about the purpose of the directory. Be clear in your minds that there's a difference between the purpose of the directory and the data processing surrounding the directory and the purpose of the processing of all registrant data, because the processing of all registrant data includes also the escrow, the data retention, access to zone files, how the system actually works, the provision of data to the registries, the thick versus thin who is issue. So it's a bigger enchilada, as it were. I'm sorry, I'm using enchilada, and the metaphor appears to be pizza and calzone. So anyway, these task forces carried on and did research. They looked at improving accuracy because, of course, the folks that were fighting abuse wanted more accurate data, and people were registering as Mickey Mouse and giving their address as whoever they felt like stealing an address from. So this wasn't working from their perspective. Now, it's important to note that given the basic failure to respect data protection law during these early years, privacy proxy services emerged, and registrars were offering to put their own data into the who is for their customers to avoid having their name, address, and phone number put in the who is. So that became embedded fairly early, and the Government Advisory Committee, among others, were fairly critical, accusing the privacy proxy services of masking criminals. And it may be that there were criminals. They finally did some research on that and found that actually there weren't. There's plenty of legitimate actors. Oh, dear. There's plenty of legitimate actors who want to have their data protected. So anyway, the Who Is review team was struck in 2010 to 2012. We now have a new Who Is review team. I'm a member. I can't say I've been really working very hard because there's so much going on with the GDPR that
we're extremely preoccupied. It's very hard to make progress on this at the moment. I arrived at ICANN being invited to come to the experts working group as a privacy expert in 2013. I had participated with ICANN back in 2005 when I was the director of research at the Canadian Privacy Commissioner's office, and in fact, that was after having drafted the Canadian CIRA's first privacy policy, so I was fairly familiar with the issues. I would say to all of those of you who are struggling to understand these issues, I was still extremely overwhelmed when I got onto the experts working group at the complexity of these systems, the need to master all of the details of how the system works, and some of the folks that are on the RDS review, the RDS working group at the moment still claim I don't understand how the internet works. So, you know, don't be abashed if you're finding this a lot to master. It is. So anyway, the experts working group was a unique entity in that it was not a, while there were people drawn from ICANN stakeholder groups, it was not a the same kind of consensus working group that we have in the regular PDP. The consultation mechanisms were not as robust. We went from an early draft that was presented in Buenos Aires to a complete draft that really didn't have a consultation period at the end of it. We reported to the board. So I have threatened to write an annotated version of that document. There's a lot of good work in it, but there was a lot of compromise made, including by your lone privacy advocate here, and I think it needs to be thoroughly unpacked as opposed to taking it as a gospel about how to revise the RDS. Anyway, the current RDS working group that I see several members of are on the call. That started in 2015, and we have no clue when it's going to end. It's feeling like forever. In the middle of all of this, back in 2011, there was a transition to thick registries. And possibly a word on that. You tell me when I'm getting too much into detail here, Farzi, but the difference between thick and thin registries, most of the registries numerically are thick, meaning that the registrar transfers a lot of registrant data to them. The initial ones operated by VeriSign, remembering that the whole reason for ICANN in the beginning was to move this out of ICANN, American government control, and make it more competitive and allow other entries into the system. So at that point, .com and .org and some of the registries operated by VeriSign in the United States, or Network Solutions as it was previously known, had the bulk of the world registration. So they were forced to have only thin data. Now it is believed there is enough competition that we could move to thick data. And I won't get into the difference between thick and thin, but that I would say as a data protection person that there was insufficient input from data protection authorities and experts in that whole transition to thick registries working group. And I don't mean to criticize folks, but, you know, it takes a lot to figure out all the implications of these things.
So, Stephanie, just to add to the thick thinkhood, I was not involved, but I have heard that NCSG was against this thin to thick transition, but it was a battle that we did not win, and they went ahead with it. And the problem is that when you transfer this data to the register, first of all, there's a lot of data that they gather, and then the transfer of the data from the registrar to registry creates privacy issues and data protection issues. Go ahead, Stephanie. Maybe we can speed it up and go to the data protection issues soon. So we have only 15 minutes and we want to have a discussion before ICANN staff join us. And I think some of them have joined us already.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just skip over the last elements. The 2013 Registrar's Accreditation Agreement is the latest one of the Registrar's Accreditation Agreements. There are four of them. There are increasing demands for data accuracy and data elements in the Registrar's Accreditation Agreements. This particular one attracted the attention of the Data Protection Commissioners, notably the Article 29 Working Group, Working Party, which is that group of data commissioners who are soon to become the board, mostly over data retention. They were quite upset about that and about the failure of the WHO's conflicts with law to actually work. So you will find correspondence on the ICANN correspondence page relating to this particular argument. So the WHO is data delivery requirements are spelled out in the Registrar's Accreditation Agreement. So are the requirements in terms of retention and escrow, and also a provision that folks have not really paid much attention to, the data must be available for bulk processing by third-party service providers. That is a requirement, which is, you know, it means once the data is out of the corral, it's gone, as it were, because value-added service providers who are, it must be said, performing a vital role for law enforcement and cybercrime enforcement agents, but they scrape up all the data and repackage it with additional data and sell services. And good luck getting your data out of that particular service if indeed you have not understood the implications of a public who is and put your data in there. So let's go over the data protection issues. So I think I've already said that ICANN is the controller and sets the requirements. So they become the data processors. The purpose of collection, use, and disclosure is not agreed except for a provisional agreement reached in 2006. Now, many stakeholders are pointing to the provisions in the ICANN bylaws that point out that ICANN is there to ensure the stability of the Internet, stability and security of the Internet. That's not a purpose of collection, use, and disclosure. It's too broad. It does inform us about the remit of ICANN, though. Individuals are not necessarily informed of their rights under data protection law. The current RAA has a fleeting reference, but no details on how you are obliged to tell your registrants of their rights under data protection law. Bulk access to data is required. I went over that. And the value-added services have proliferated. Registrars in jurisdictions with data protection laws are required to seek a waiver of these requirements, and that includes there's waivers for data retention, if that's illegal in your jurisdiction, and there are waivers for enforcement of data protection laws. But they have to prove they have an enforceable order, which, and I was on that conflicts with law group and repeated until I was blue in the face that that is not how data protection law works in most jurisdictions. We have to remember that there are over 120 national data protection laws now, not just the European Union with its 28 states. So, you know, in Canada, you have to go to federal court to get an enforceable order. When I say you, I mean the Data Protection Commissioner has to, because they don't have binding powers. That doesn't mean that this is, you know, so what mechanism would you use in Canada to get out of the problem of breaking data protection law? Do you have to go to federal court and receive a fine and damages before you can get out of complying with ICANN's contract? This is kind of ridiculous. At any rate, pardon my voice, I've still got the flu, I'm afraid. Accuracy requirements are for the purpose of law enforcement. Registrars are forced to verify data and suspend domains where the contact is in question. I would note here that while it is a requirement of data protection law that data be accurate, that is governed by the proportionality principle, and in other laws, different provisions say, as accurate as is necessary, bearing in mind the interests of the individual that is concerned. In other words, you don't have the right to get their latest address, phone number, for your own marketing purposes every month just to fulfill an accuracy requirement. It has to be depending on the needs. Data elements include the name, address, phone, fax, as I said. Data retention elements, they're exhaustive. I urge you to read that RAA. They include metadata, financial information, IP address, and all email traffic. That is a very remarkable set of data retention requirements. So under proposed solutions, I'm just picking the two that we're fighting about in the RDS most these days. When I say the RDS, I mean the RDS CDP, the working group. The purpose of the RDS data collection, use, and disclosure or processing must match the narrow ICANN remit. And again, there is a problem in language here. You'll see the last bullet. ICANN, in my five-year experience here, has always discussed the purpose of personal data processing in terms of all of the use cases that have arisen over the last 20 years of violating data protection law. So, in other words, there's all these useful things that your personal data is being used for, including domain tools and all of the value-added services, and nobody's willing to give up those use cases. But that's not the purpose for providing personal information to your registrar. The purpose is to register a domain name. That is the narrow remit of ICANN, managing the domain name system, not all criminal activity on the Internet. So there is a great risk that ICANN is going to become a one-stop repository of personal data that would otherwise be circumscribed under national law by the actors that usually like to get this data. And that's a huge topic we could spend an hour on, so I'll try to skip ahead here. The other, so basically actors are trying to broaden the purpose to include all of these use cases. Under solutions, consent. That was one of the reasons I issued a dissent to the experts working group final report, because basically some of the members, I'm under Chatham House rules on that particular committee, came in at the last minute and said, okay, but we have to be able to consent to collection, use, and disclosure of personal information. That's a mandatory thing. This is how the United States has grown up to be the biggest personal information economy in the world, that they've never legislated, and the approach to data protection has been notice and choice. We give somebody a notice, this is what we're doing with your data, and agree. And after that, there are no rights. So that, I certainly regarded that as the camel's nose sneaking under the tent there. Once you give people the ability to consent, you also have to give them the ability to withdraw. You have to give them clear information about what is involved, the subsequent uses, including all of that value-added processing of their data, how withdrawal would be done. I would argue that it's meaningless in this context because good luck getting it from value-added services around the world. And
Stephanie, sorry to interrupt you. Aiden has his hand up and he has a question.
Okay, shoot.
Aiden, go ahead.
Thanks, Fazane, and thanks, Stephanie. I don't mean to interrupt, so if you do want to continue your slides first, I'm happy to wait towards the end.
No, go ahead.
Thanks. So my question is actually more of a comment, but there is a question towards the end. So one of the analogies that I really like is to say that domain names are the street signs of the Internet. They may, well, guide us to where content could be found, be it a website, a mailing list, or other content. And the person that, you know, that posted those physical street signs never before in history had to autograph that street sign with his or her physical address, his or her phone number, his or her email, and so forth. So it's odd that that's a position online. And so one of the goals for the expert working group if I'm not mistaken, and I could be because I was not a member of the EWG, but you were, was that registrants should be contactable, not necessarily reachable. And I think that distinction is really important because being reachable subjects one to potential arrest or harassment for any type of message or content that is posted online, whereas being contactable does not necessarily. And so when we were talking about sort of the history of where we've gone, I was wondering if you might be able to comment on why did the EWG lose this in the end? Why did we go from being contactable to there being this desire for a registrant to be reachable? I hope that makes sense. Thanks.
Yes, and I think part of the problem with having simply an anonymous email, you know, abuse@digitaldiscretion.ca, part of the problem with that is if I'm a crook, I'm not going to respond to your email. If I have abused a trademark, the trademark enforcement folks need an address to serve papers on. Although the EWG discussions are not public, this was debated at some length in the Privacy Proxy Services Accreditation Working Group because, you know, there are certainly valid concerns about the use of proxy services. If you don't know the real address of the individual, you can't serve papers. If the individual is operating through a registrar that is not living up to its commitments, they're not helpful, you know. There is a need for them to provide the address for the serving of papers. So I think that's one of the issues and one of the reasons why there has been so much pressure to get the address and the phone number and all the rest of it, because an email can be meaningless. Thanks. Now, moving right along, I see comments in the chat that we'd like to hear more about GDPR compliance. I just want to reiterate that compliance with 9546, these data protection issues, that is GDPR compliance. Not much has changed in the actual provisions. So our recommendations in the draft letter to the Article 29 Working Party, which is out for comments right now to the list, and which we now have to revise because, of course, February 28th, ICANN released its model that we're going to hear about in a minute, and already there are some things that are fairly strongly worded that have been accommodated in the model, so we need to do an edit. We don't want to confuse the Article 29 Working Party. We are writing this letter because Jeroen Mardi has encouraged all stakeholder groups to write to the Article 29, engage with them, and discuss our views. So we figured we'd better after we saw some of the other missives they've received because our view is not necessarily shared by those who've written. We would like ICANN to embrace the spirit of data protection and focus on the risk to registrants, not simply do a de minimis approach to data protection compliance. We view that the matter as ICANN should not be running a data repository for third-party actors. And law enforcement is not a legitimate purpose of processing data. Let me be clear here. Civil society supports law enforcement. We don't want our members harassed. We do not want our members' data stolen. We don't want our members subject to persecution. We don't want any of the things that law enforcement claims must be prevented by an open who is. However, ICANN does not gather registrant data for the purposes of law enforcement. It's not a law enforcement agency. And this is a subtle distinction that is not particularly well understood, certainly not on the RDS working group. We've tried, but it's not really working. I would encourage you to read when it is released the recent opinion of the International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunications. They deal with this issue. Yes, of course, law enforcement should get access to data that is gathered for another purpose, but you don't gather data to serve law enforcement. Think about banking. Think about your telephone company. There is not additional data gathered to serve law enforcement. But that's what has been happening at ICANN, in our view. We have always fought for the freedom of expression. And this, of course, is not a right that is covered in data protection law. Entities such as religious groups, press agencies, newspapers, journals, you name it, women's groups that are often subject to harassment are not entitled to protection under data protection law, except insofar as their staff, their employees or individuals representing them in a WHO is entry might be eligible for protection under data protection law. So that gives you a problem where if a religious group that is going to be persecuted has to reveal their name, address, and phone number, then they are at risk. So we have fought to protect that. We've fought to protect free expression. And we argue that basically a name is not a website. It is not necessarily clear when someone thinks up a wonderful name and decides to grab it that they're going to use it for commercial purposes, that it's going to be, you know, that it would be a legal person or indeed a natural person. So this is a problem for the registrars in actually getting good input on this point, accurate input. We make a point in our letter that cybercrime fighting, it's a legitimate reason to disclose, but it needs to be on an accredited basis. What do I mean by accreditation? There are standards already out there to accredit entities to, for instance, issue certifications for websites. That's the kind of accreditation. What are your professional standards? How do you manage personal data or commercial data? What are the security implications? What security protocols are you following? All of those can be spelled out in a professional standard, and that is a lot better than just allowing people to self-accredit and say, I'm a paralegal, I work for a law firm, I need access to this data. Or I'm a cybercrime fighter, I work in my basement, I'm saving the world, let me access to this data. Okay, Farsi, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. We are... we need to move on to the second segment of this webinar, and I can see that Teresa is already here. Not sure if John has been able to join us, but so in the second segment, thank you very much for. I don't know if you finished. We have there is another slide on slide 14. But let me just say how we are going to proceed. What we are going to do is that, I'm sorry. What we are going to do is we are going to talk about the latest ICANN compliance model with GDPR. We are going to, as you know, on 28th February day, issued the latest compliance model. And then we are going to discuss it with ICANN staff and in this webinar, and we can ask questions, we can comment, we can raise our concerns. Stephanie, if you want to go through, because I'm not sure if John is here to brief us on the ICANN model, but...
No. Okay, let me just say very briefly, I'll go over the points that I haven't spoken about. We are seeing here that ICANN really needs a comprehensive privacy policy that covers ICANN's activities as a data controller. This could be transformed into a set of binding corporate rules. This was certainly the line of argument I took in the EWG. It was a non-starter. But we need a privacy policy, you know, other global corporations have privacy policies. Why not ICANN? So this is kind of a piecemeal approach. And we understand that there's pressure on right now to comply with GDPR by May 25th. That privacy policy should have been done years ago, and it'll take a while. But we need to think towards that. Registrant data beyond who is needs to be in that privacy policy. So I've talked about data retention and escrow. Transporter data flow issues are rife in ICANN. We need to figure out when reasonably the data should be maintained at the registrant's home base. And SICU is, of course, causes a problem there. Access to zone files is an issue that is discussed in the ECO workbook, and I urge folks who understand this to help me understand it, because it looks like there's an end run around not having access to who is by simply registering and getting a access to the zone files. So that's pretty well all I have to say, and if we're still waiting for our guest to arrive, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Stephanie. I am not really sure. I can see Teresa here, but I'm not really sure if John has made it, and if he has not, then we can just go over the latest ICANN compliance model for GDPR. We don't really have
Sorry, sorry to interrupt you. Teresa is on the call, so if you wanted to hand it over to her.
Okay. Yeah, Teresa, please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for having us on the call. We also have the opportunity to have Akram Atala on the call, and John Shifley will be joining shortly as well. So thank you very much. I don't know exactly what you've discussed at this stage yet, so maybe what I can do is just provide an overview of what we have posted earlier this week, and then we can talk a little bit about what the interim model encompasses that's been put out there and some of the next steps around that. Would that be helpful around the context of this?
Yes, that would. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay, fantastic. So on the 28th of February, as you know from the blog that also Joran has posted, we posted two documents. One is a high-level summary of the proposed interim model, which also includes a proposed accreditation program with regards to the access to continued access to the full thick WHOIS data in a tiered model overall. The summary document maps to sort of a matrix which shows how the different input from the community was incorporated. It also identifies where there are still some elements where there is not alignment within the community around certain issues and which really warrant some further community discussion on those specific topics. And then the summary document goes into more detail around what the proposed interim model encompasses and what it reflects and where there was consensus or agreement among many of the community discussions and what we reflected in that document there. So that is more specifically to the interim model, and we can look at talking to that in more detail also when John is able to join. We've also captured at the attachment 2 in the document an accreditation program for continued access to full WHOIS data. That is, as one goes into the process of then how to allow for access in a two-tiered system, what a possible approach would be for an accreditation program to allow for the continued access to this, and how to provide a mechanism whereby both law enforcement and other governmental authorities recognized by governments could have access And also, of course, private third parties abiding by a proposed sort of codes of conduct that would be developed in consultation with the Governmental Advisory Committee in order to ensure that those entities that do need access through various mechanisms do have that put forward. So those documents are out there. We would really welcome feedback and input on those. As we go both into the ICANN meeting and, of course, prior to the ICANN meeting, as we try to solidify and reach agreement within the community on many of the different elements. And, you know, the part that's important is where there's the recognition of competing community views around certain elements of the proposed interim model, whether the community itself can come together around some of those areas of differences. So that's what we put out on earlier this week. It's referred to as the Calzone model. We started out with the pizza, and now we're sort of solidifying it a little bit more, so hence the name. That's where we are at this point in the process. So maybe I can answer any questions around that, and then once we have John joining, we can also delve a little bit deeper around some of the discussions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Teresa, for this brief background. I just asked Maria to also put the latest model, interim model, in Adobe. And so if you have any question on the model from the participants, you are welcome to ask. Just to mention that Akram Atala had also joined us. And so we will have John Jeffrey and Akram and Teresa, if you have any questions or if you want to comment to them. If the participant have any question on the model, or I'm going to put forward our questions.
Sure, and I understand that John has also been able to join now as well. So thank you.
I'm sorry for being late.
And David is here too. So brief our members on the latest interim model, we can see that still when they are keeping the thick quiz in the model, the data is not minimized as much as it should be, and GAC has been given, in my opinion, too much power to come up with a code of conduct and the accreditation process. So these are some of the concerns that when I was looking at the model and discussing it with others we had, and so I just wanted to know how is this model going to evolve? Are you going to just implement it as it is, or are we going to talk about our concerns in Puerto Rico, and then afterwards our concerns will be taken into consideration, and then you come up with another model based on that, or is this kind of final?
So I think, as we also shared in the blog, that the input right now is really important with regards to this latest iteration that was put out there, in that we really want to continue the conversation around this, including, of course, there'll be opportunities for conversations at the ICANN 61 meeting. But any feedback that could be provided earlier is, of course, very welcome. And that's why these opportunities to have discussions are, of course, also important, in addition to more specific feedback through the website email address that's also available.
Okay, great. And then I have another. Go ahead.
I would just add, you know, to answer the question very directly, it's not final. So we're still soliciting input, and we're still hoping to evolve it to even a better community-aligned model. Now, that said, we've gone a long way toward trying to align it to the law, and we're going to put it in front of the regulatory authorities as soon as possible, and we're going to try to move it forward because there's a great deal of pressure relating to the implementation of it in terms of timing for the May deadline before sanctions would go into place, options for sanctions.
Okay, thank you. Aiden is saying in chat, when is the model final? We are 2 months away from enforcement of GDPR beginning. And to add to that, there is a lot of emphasis on coming up with a layered approach, layered access to who is, it looks like that it might not be feasible to come up with a layered access before the law goes into effect. If that is not, if it is not possible to come up with a model that is layered access, but also the community likes it, what would ICANN do? Are you going to still stick with a layered model and implement it, or are we going to have a stricter approach without a layered model until the community comes up with a solution?
I can take that if you'd like, and Akram or Teresa can come in behind if that's okay. I think that the approach we're still taking is that there would be a layered model as soon as possible. So even though we're only a few months away, we believe that there is the ability to implement aspects of it, including the layered model, and we're continuing to push for that. If there is some difficulty in doing that, then we would be asking the DPAs what would happen, and we would be going through a very careful process to assure that we're not putting ICANN and thousands of contracted parties at risk against the law. So still very much driving toward a layered model to be started as soon as possible.
Okay, and so are there any questions from the participants now, or I don't want to be the only one who asks questions, so go ahead, because I have five questions here I want to ask. So if you don't put your hands up, you see me talking. Oh, Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I don't want to be the only one asking questions either, so please speak up. I'm pretty skeptical about the Government Advisory Committee coming up with an accreditation model that is robust in the next month. The GAC would have trouble even authenticating or rather accrediting its own law enforcement agencies, I suspect. I mean, some countries obviously are well organized, others less so. But those of us who were at the jurisdiction meeting here in Ottawa this week, we're privy to some of the very difficult problems that we face in accrediting access, because we have to understand when we talk about accrediting in a tiered access system, we as the NCSG, we're not talking about you get past the door and then anybody in your organization has full access to everything in the system. Access has to be on a limited basis, and the data protection commissioners have made that pretty clear. So some agencies might have access to everything, but not every single agency. And the implementation of a single point of contact model, such as the UK has for its RIPA, that takes a while, and it requires some tech behind it. So that only deals with the law enforcement side. There are other entities such as law firms who are fighting abuse. Who is going to do that? I can't imagine strange law enforcement agencies being willing to take that job on. So that's my question. Thanks.
Yeah, Yeah, so I think this is John again. So we agree. We got some hard tasks in front of us, and we have time pressures that are very serious. And appreciate your concerns about the timeline. We share some of those. So any ideas you have that would help us get there faster, we're certainly listening.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, John and Stephanie. So I do have an idea, John. How about we just keep it to Model 3 and that would save I can protect ICANN until we come up with a layered approach that can appeal to all the stakeholder groups as a bit of a stretch, but can make everyone equally unhappy. So I think that can be a viable approach if you cannot come up with a layered model. And as I said, I see too much emphasis in this proposal on GAC and how GAC is going to come up with the accreditation process, which worries me. The other thing that I see in your document is that you've enumerated the purposes of WHOIS, and it was in the previous document as well. I am not sure about some of these purposes, and I think the purposes of WHOIS is something that the community should come up with. Of course, it should not be against the law, but the community should come up with the purposes. And what I see in the purposes you enumerate in the document, some of them I don't think are in line with ICANN mission, and at NCSU we believe that they should be in line with ICANN mission. So I just wanted to flag that we don't want these purposes as enumerated in the document to be set in stone and be considered as WHOIS purpose in general in the future. And I can see that Aiden has a question. Aiden, go ahead.
Thanks, Fathane, and I didn't mean to interrupt. I only had a process question. So when I participated on a recent webinar that was organized by the IPC and the BC, they had this model already. And this webinar was held at least a week before it was made public to the rest of us. So clearly there has been some degree of consultation between ICANN.org and certain stakeholder groups. Consultation or negotiations, perhaps, that has not been transparent. So given we've just heard that this model is not yet final, I just wanted to say that I would be very concerned if the final model that was developed was one which subsequently emerged without our feedback, without our input, rather. I just wanted to ask, after this formal opportunity to provide comment on the interim model that we're seeing today closes, can you commit, and this is a question to either Teresa, Akram, or John, can you commit to not engaging in secretive negotiations while we are not invited to the table? Thank you.
Yeah, so this is John. I'll just take it quickly, and then maybe somebody else wants to pick it up. But
sure.
We don't see them as secret. We don't see it as secret negotiations. We've actually offered to communicate with anybody that wanted to talk to us, like we're doing here. So I believe most of the conversations that I've been on have been recorded. We don't stop and say, who are you and can we talk to you? We've been open to talking to anybody, as a number of people on this call know, because they've been involved in various parts of those conversations. So we're happy to talk anytime, and we're asking you for your input. I believe you've already provided input at an earlier phase, and this is now a new publication, and we're asking for input on that too. So I appreciate what you're saying. No intent here to be secretive, and sorry if that's the way it's been interpreted.
Thanks. I just have a quick follow-up question.
Sure, and then I'll weigh in. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Thank you, Teresa. But I think the important part of my question, or rather statement, was missed, that this did actually happen, right? that you suddenly did not come back to the NCHT a week before you made this model public and show it to us. You circulated it to the business constituency, you circulated it to the intellectual property constituency, and you asked what did they find wrong with it. We were not notified of that.
That's actually not correct. That's not correct. We engaged in a series of meetings with various community members and groups and provided them a verbal discussion of what we were thinking this model would look like. We did not circulate it. The first publication
of this
model is
when I was on a webinar held a full week, maybe 10 days, before this model we see on the screen was public, they had it already.
Because they had engaged in conversations with us about what we were talking about. It was not finalized, and we continued to evolve it through all of these discussions as we're continuing to evolve it now that it's published. So I appreciate what you're saying, but again, I don't argue the point. I understand your point, and we're here, we're listening, we want your input, and we also have, as everyone's pointed out in the previous questions, a very close timeline in order to make sure that we comply with this law.
Great. Thank you very much, John. Thank you. Aiden, your point is taken, and we will be, as NCHU, we will be more active in reaching out to ICANN staff to be briefed on the progress of coming what various changes that can happen will happen to the model, and we will be certainly more active, and as you can see, that the staff members have been attending our webinar, so I think they will be cooperative as well. I saw that Teresa's hand was up. Teresa, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I just wanted to really reinforce, you know, what John was saying. There's been, you know, there's a lot of different community discussions around this, and so part of what we're also doing is just trying to hear and get the input and consolidate that input in areas where we see that there's alignment. And, of course, part of the reason of putting this iteration out, which as we noted, is not a final iteration, is, again, to get feedback and also really to flag where there's some areas where there are not agreement in order to really allow for an opportunity for the community to try to come together and see whether they can reach agreement on some of those areas. So this conversation here and the opportunity to speak with this group, hear things, opportunity to talk to other groups, hear things, and then obviously going into Puerto Rico and the ICANN meeting, the opportunity there, I think will be very helpful and informative to be hearing from everybody, as this is quite fluid and moving quite quickly. But as we've noted, we do have a time frame where a final decision will have to be made. And so we just want to make sure to capture as much of the community input as possible and to keep showing iterations of that. So this conversation is very helpful, especially if, you know, you have substantive input, as we've heard from the beginning of the discussions, where there's an opportunity to capture it.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Teresa. So are there any comments on the model from the participants? So also what we have noticed in the model is that there is no the data has not been, so we are speaking with the fixed model already, and we have not changed that. There is no data minimization, and this has been flagged by the community. And I think in echo comments as well, that if you are speaking with the same amount of data that you want to gather, then and also speak with WHOIS, which is going to, and then the data transfer, this might not be in compliance with GDPR. So, John, I'm wondering why we insist on keeping thick WHOIS and also keeping all the collection of data, or you can correct me if I'm wrong about collection of data.
It's a very good question. It's one we've struggled with through this process, because we've had very good comments indicating that, you know, there's an opportunity for data minimalization And we've also had comments saying that every single field is used. So when we did the analysis between building the three models and building this one, we looked at every field, and we tried to find things that weren't being used, that didn't have a purpose, where there wasn't a community group that said that there was a value in utilization of that data. We at first identified a handful of fields that we saw that just weren't even being used. It didn't appear in public who is as something that was being utilized. It was a registry registrant ID, which was assigned by registries to the registrant. But as we looked at that, the anti-abuse community, for example, identified that that actually had a purpose and that that data field was filled in port 43, and we went through a couple of other fields like that as well. This is something we took very seriously, but we've been unable to identify fields that we don't have community groups indicating that there's a specific purpose for them in terms of collection. In terms of publication, obviously, it's much more limited. The collection, what is going to be displayed in the public quiz versus what would be behind the firewall is really, you know, where we've come into some of the critical questions, such as registrant email addresses and other factors, where we're seeing different aspects of the community taking very divergent views on those aspects.
Yes, thank you. So community views are very important, but fortunately we have this beautiful line which is going to be in place, and I think ICANN priority should be complied with the law, but also consider community views.
Certainly you didn't hear me say that I didn't think we were compliant with the law. So when we were going through those fields, we were basing it against the tests that exist in the law about whether there was a legitimate purpose for the use of those fields that would be collected.
Yes, and this legitimate purpose is, how is this legitimate purpose being interpreted? Is GATS going to come up with a legitimate purpose? Or because purpose, as we believe, should be in line with ICANN mission. But are we going to come up with like additional legitimate purposes, and who's going to come up with that?
Yeah. So if you remember from the very beginning, this has been a focus of what information we've solicited from the community. So we went through the use case analysis back in the this was late summer, early fall. And we collected data about that, and then we have gone through independent legal analysis and other things looking at what would be the legal test that we could apply. So we're building what we're calling the cookbook, because it's, helping build the calzone and provide the justification, and the cookbook is essentially a document that's going to go through every element, and we'll talk about why each of those elements, we believe the position taken on the model and each of those elements is justified under the law. So that's the way we're approaching it. That'll become part of the publication of the final model. And as we reach a draft of that, we will circulate that hopefully significantly before the final model is completed.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, Rafi, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Farzan, and thanks for Akram, John, Theresa for joining us on this call. So my question is quite simple. I asked it in the Adobe Connect channel about the timeline, since we are talking about an interim model. And I think the concern that an interim that will last forever. And also I know that if there is any change, and if we need proper RDS or WHOIS policy, that should be the community work. But do you have kind of a timeline for this interim model? So by when we should really work on more sustainable solutions? So the concern that we set up something that won't change for many years. So any idea on this?
Rafik, I think it actually is really in part also depends upon how long it takes for the RDS working group to complete its work. That's certainly not something I'm in a position to answer, but maybe others are.
And I would add in terms of a timeline to needing additional comments, it's right away. We need your input as soon as you possibly can. This is the last or one of the final stages of a multi-part process, which included the publication of the three models by ICANN and the publication of the other models from the community, number of weeks ago. So we're sort of coming down to a final time in terms of accepting comments and trying to build to an interim final model. And remember, this is interim because it's very likely that this has to be a temporary specification, which will then lead to a new PDP under our bylaws. And so this will engage in a policy process where all of these things get to get rehashed and rethought, and hopefully we can emerge with a community process, because that temporary specification, if that's the way that we go toward enforcement of this model, that temporary specification only lasts every 3 months and can be renewed by the ICANN board for only up to a year. So we're going to be driving for a policy process which has all of this thought through in the community and presents an actual policy, very quickly.
Thank you, John. Rafik, if you don't have a follow-up, I have a question about the applicability of this model. When I looked at the model, I think it is European oriented, so it is not a global model that applies to all whose data. Did I get that right?
So the applicability part of the model goes two ways. It applies certainly for anyone in the European Economic Area. It must apply, and any contracted party that's utilizing the model must apply it. We're also giving them the option to not apply it, to apply it globally to everyone, if in fact that is their choice. So they have an opportunity to make an election of whether it's applying only to EEA, European Economic Area registrants, or whether it would apply more broadly globally.
So, okay, this would be registrars will decide whether they want to apply this or not. So contractually, they are not bound by it, but they can decide. Okay, I think I got that right since John didn't correct me.
So I'd say sort of. So they're contractually bound by it, and if they're electing not to apply it, for example, to non-EEA residents, then they would have to, we believe they should be entering into a controller agreement with us so that they're taking responsibility for that decision. So we want them to be accountable for that decision.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. So, well, I think we have enough information for now. We are drafting. How would the process work? And now, do we need to provide comments on this on this model before Puerto Rico and discuss it in Puerto Rico? And should we have separate meetings with you about the model and tell you our concerns, or are we going to have like a community? Because I know there's a cross community session. We are also involved in organizing that on GDPR, but just process wise, I think we can just meet with you in PR and also later on send an email and comment on the model.
So I think, as John had shared, feedback as soon as possible is really important. We clearly have the opportunity also to discuss it in PR, but if you have feedback before that, that would be very helpful.
Okay, great. So we can put together something with the NCSG Policy Committee. Just to reiterate the concerns generally we've been hearing, one is that ICANN, the WHO's purpose should be in accordance to ICANN mission. And anything beyond that, that is not in ICANN mission should not be called WHO's purpose. So we are very concerned about this, and we want the purpose to be discussed within the community, and without just having like a set of purposes that has been just that a law firm come up with. So that's one concern. The other is the data minimization that we just discussed with John. And another concern is self-certification accreditation, which in this model, it says that there's no self-certification, but Stephanie kind of had the point that if you just consult with YAC on accreditation and not include the community in the process of coming up with accreditation, it might be called self-certification in a way. So we are also concerned about exclusively giving YAC that role, especially because YAC has not been really active in on the side of data protection. They've been more active on the side of abuse and public safety. So we are not sure how YAC can help you with coming up with layered approach. And in the end, if the layered approach is not ready, we are concerned that something will be implemented before in a rush that we cannot change later on. And that is concerning, especially if it's a layered approach that gives access to players that that can breach data protection. And in general, we have been at NCUC and NCSG, we have been long advocating for the privacy protection of the registrants in WHOIS. And you already know our concerns. We made them quite clear. But we are happy that GDPR is coming into effect. And we are not glad that a law is helping us to achieve our goal, because it would have been nice to get some data protection without the help of law, but with ICANN policy. So that's about it. If there are any other comments, if there are no other comments, then we can just adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much. I don't know if Teresa, John, or Akram have any comments. And thank you very much for joining us today, and certainly clarified some things. And we are going to be active and send you our comments and concerns about the model you provided.
This is Sean. I would just add that it's really important that we do get your comments, because it's an important part, and having those comments in writing and having them in a way that we can show them very much supports helping us finalize the model. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you, Teresa, Akram. Thank you, NCSG members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. Sal, can you please end the recording?